The cinema specialists are back, and today we are talking about Thor, Love and Thunder, and Naiad. Thor, Love and Thunder, the Taika Waititi movie from 2022. It's a trilogy, I guess, of Thor now. Are we on four Thors? It doesn't matter.
That's the fourth Thor.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how many we're on. Naiad, though, Oscar-nominated, a movie that really surprised some people to see Annette Bening and both Jodie Foster get nominated for Oscars over some other bigger names. We'll be talking Naiad first and Thor, Love and Thunder second. I will say this off the top because we were yelled at by Peridium last night on our over-under game. We were yelled at. So if you're watching this video, if you're listening to this video, if you make it 45 seconds in, please like this video. Liking works. It helps. And if you're not subscribed somehow, but you're a cinema specialist fan, you got to be subscribed because, I mean, man, if you're a cinema specialist fan, you are here for all the right reasons. So like this video, though. Liking the video helps so much. Peridium really helped us see the light on that after yelling at us. You know how Peridium gets. He raises his voice to a totally high level. But please like the video if you are watching a minute and 10 seconds in. If you didn't make it this far, goodbye. Sayonara. We didn't need you anyway. But thank you all so much if you could do that. We are done with Marvel Cinematic Universe rewatch or watch, because for me, I never watched them. Next week is our last one. We're going to be doing Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, and then we're going to take a break. We're going to do Dune 2 the following week, and then John and I are going to jump into some brackets because we feel that brackets are fun. I am going to reveal the two bracket topics for that now so that people can be excited. I don't think John knew I was going to do this. And you know what, John? You don't get to find out until now. Number one, the first one we're going to do is Adam Sandler. And I think this is going to be a really fun one because we're not going through this in our snobbish way saying, what's the best Adam Sandler movie as we swill our bourbon. That's not what we're doing here. We are going to talk about what the most Adam Sandler movie really is. That's what we're getting into. And we're going to talk about different variations of Adam Sandler. Some good movies like Uncut Gems and Punch Drunk Love. Some absolutely ridiculously stupid movies like Billy Madison and, Happy Gilmore. And we might even throw in some just flat out bad movies. We haven't decided on how many we're going to do or which movies, but that's going to be our first subject. So that'll be the second week of March. And then our next bracket is going to be the 16 most popular movies on Letterboxd as of now. So we'll be talking about those, and I'm really excited for it because I made John do some off-the-cuff social media content that should be coming out in the next week or two that I'm sure McKenna is having the time of her life editing right now. So again, look forward to all of that stuff. We're going to take a little break from Marvel Cinematic Universe. We're going to do those two brackets. We'll have Dune Part 2 at the beginning of March, and then we'll be doing a third bracket, which we haven't decided the topic on yet. And then when we get into April, we are going to start something new. So keep in tune for that. Thank you all for listening through this as I have suffered through the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But first, we're talking about Naiad. Naiad. My review for this film is the perfect summation of this film. And if I was going to recommend a film review to anybody written by any author, I would recommend my film review of Naiad to everybody around the world because I truly think it is the most perfect review I have ever written. And here it is. With a solid theatrical release, this could have been the feel-good movie of the year. Instead, Netflix gobbled it up and no one saw it because it got buried beneath a bunch of garbage. Wasn't sure how I felt about Foster's performance. Then they showed the real Bonnie at the end and it all made sense. That's my review. That's what I got for Naiad. John, how did you feel about Naiad?
This movie is way better than I thought it would be.
You only gave it 2.5 stars. I was kind of surprised.
It was really close to 3 stars. It was really close to 3 stars. Ultimately, I decided to go 2.5 just because, like, I thought the script wasn't the greatest, but the story itself was pretty compelling. And quite frankly, I understand why Annette Bening and Jodie Foster got these nominations.
I got to be honest. Annette Bening is probably the greatest actor/actress to never win an Oscar. It's between her and Peter O'Toole. And I honestly think I might give it to her over Peter O'Toole because she is just so consistently great. And to see this 65-year-old woman, because Annette Bening is 65 now, go through the physical demands of this role. She does most of the swimming in this movie. She also does all of, like, you know, the ab exercises. John, go lay on your back right now and pick your feet up in that way and then do a crunch and touch your toes. You know, like, that's not a fun thing to do. And here's 65-year-old Annette Bening doing that. again, I wasn't sure how I felt about Jodie Foster's performance. And then when they showed the real Bonnie at the end, I was like, man, no, Jodie Foster was not overacting at all. She nails who this woman is. And it made me respect it so much more that I actually kind of wanted to rewind and just go watch some of this. But the problem you're going to have with these types of movies is always that they're just so unbelievably predictable, right? Mm-hmm. It's a biopic about an athlete. So you know exactly where this is going all the time. That's why Million Dollar Baby was so great, because it wasn't a true story, but it felt like a true story. And then it pulled the wool out from under you, or the rug out from under you, to make you just suffer through the last half hour of that movie, because it's probably the most depressing half hour in a sports movie ever. Maybe in just like any movie of the 2000s, it's up there. It's so ridiculously brutal. But it's because it's subverting what these sports movies normally are. And so a movie like Naiad, where you know exactly what's going to happen, you need something special. And I think the performances of Reese Ifans, which I think I always say his name wrong, of Jodie Foster and of Annette Bening, those are special. Yeah. And there's some direction in this movie that is very good. Mm-hmm. But overall, the story is nothing. There's nothing unique about it, right? It doesn't go into the fighter element of things. But I will tell you this. This movie hit me emotionally a lot more than I want to admit. There were quite a few times in this movie where I was like, man, is it getting dusty in here? Because you just feel the frustration and the desire and like that whole thing of, maybe it was because I was a cross country runner for a large portion of my life. And I can barely run at all now, but maybe because I was a cross country runner for such a large portion of my life, I understand the frustration of like a distance athlete, of a marathon type athlete, where you're on your own and nobody cares that you're doing it. So why are you putting yourself through pain over and over and over and over and over again? And it's that desire to just achieve these things. Mm-hmm. And it's that absolutely ridiculous competitive nature. It just hit me. It hit me on kind of like a personal level. And I loved really more than anything the idea of you're never too old. Because I do think that some movies try to do that, and then you're like, okay, but like they're what, 80 for Brady? We're never too old to go to the Super Bowl and meet Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski. That's not what I mean. We're never too old to rob a bank and stand up guys. No, it's you're never too old to do something. What this woman achieved at 64 years old is absolutely absurd. It's one of the greatest athletic achievements in the history of time.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And it's really interesting because when I was watching this movie, for those of you who haven't, you know, signed up for the Patreon and been listening to our Best Picture nominee breakdowns, on yesterday's Maestro podcast, we were kind of talking about the concept of a Oscar bait film. Mm-hmm. Naiad is closer to an Oscar bait film than most Oscar bait films, like what people claim are Oscar bait films, because it's these feel-good sports stories that we see get nominated for Best Picture all the time.
All the time.
Mm-hmm. And it's actually, after watching this movie, and like, again, I quite enjoy it. Like, I enjoyed it, despite giving it 2.5 stars. But I was actually kind of shocked it didn't get a nomination for Best Picture.
And like I said, it didn't get the proper theatrical release. That's the issue with this movie. This is a movie, I think about this because I was there in 2010 when The Fighter came out. And Rocky is a special movie. Whether you like the movie or not, Rocky hit a part of America at the right time that it made it special. And there are statues built of Rocky, no matter how corny or ridiculous you think that is. That's how special that movie is. There are statues built to a fake person, right? That's like, okay, you go to Disney World and there's a statue of Walt Disney with Mickey Mouse, but at least Walt Disney's in the statue. It's not just Mickey Mouse standing there. Like, Rocky hit. And that was different. And I was there when The Fighter came out, and the way people reacted to The Fighter, of this downer of a movie with it gets into the family struggle and all that, but it's about still triumph and overcoming and doing that. And that movie legitimately could have won Best Picture in 2010. Mm-hmm. It lost to The King's Speech, but it was between The King's Speech, The Social Network, The Fighter, and Black Swan. Those are the four movies that were truly in contention that year. And The Fighter, there was a period where I thought The Fighter was the best out of that bunch, because it's just such a powerful story. And you see that then with the Creed movies, when those start coming out, mm-hmm. you see that. And the thing is, this is the exact type of movie. You have an obnoxious protagonist who is so committed to her ways, and she is just won't take no for an answer, is kind of a dick for half of the movie. And it's got the happy ending. And it has all the issues in there of a struggle. I mean, honestly, 127 hours could honestly be compared to this movie, because 127 hours just survive, survive, survive. But it got a Netflix release. And Netflix buries their shit after a week. And this wasn't a movie that Netflix spent all that much money on. So they're not that worried about recouping. They don't need this to be the number one movie on Netflix. I think right now it's actually the 9th most popular, which really makes me laugh. But I think as the Oscars are coming up, you're probably getting a lot more people watching this. But it's a bummer, because I do believe that had this gotten up there. Now, look, I don't think it should have been nominated over anything except for probably Barbie. Mm-hmm. And they were never going to leave Barbie off this year. So realistically, I'm not mad Naiad's not in there. But this was a solid movie. This was an enjoyable movie. And it's a shame. It's pretty much a prime example of why it's a shame Netflix is doing what Netflix is doing. And that is getting the rights to these movies and just putting them on their sites just to have them there. There's no other purpose. It's just there.
Especially when we look at a movie that does have the star power this movie has. Annette Bening is someone who people are attracted to. Jodie Foster is someone who, I mean, it's quite frankly has this massive renaissance going on right now with her role in the latest season of True Detective.
Yeah.
And Reese Ifrens is that type of person that you see in everything and you always forget how good he is in everything he's in.
Yeah, absolutely.
And to have like that powerhouse trio anchoring this film, it honestly, when I saw the Oscar nominations and I saw Annette Bening and Jodie Foster got them, I was like, okay, but how good could this movie actually, like, how good could this movie be? Because no one talked about it. And then to see that, like, it's a Netflix movie that just sank, it makes sense. And it's such a shame, because this movie is better than a lot of the movies we have talked about in the last few weeks when we're talking about new releases. Mm-hmm. And this should have been a movie that people were talking about. And luckily, the Academy at least recognized the performances in it so that people are watching it.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing, right? Like, you heard about this when the Oscar nominations came out, of Naiad and The Zone of Interest. You've never seen those movies. Just because you haven't seen a movie doesn't mean it's not good. And I think that's like the issue that we live in right now. I do understand that audiences determine what is pop culture. Barbie is pop culture because audiences loved it. The Rocky mm-hmm. Horror Picture Show became pop culture because it got a cult audience. Audiences determine what pop culture is. Now, in the case of music and stuff like that, the music industry, the radios and stuff, might be determining what pop culture is a little bit more in the music industry, because they're paying the money to make sure you're hearing the songs. And no matter how bad Imagine Dragons are, you've heard Imagine Dragons songs and all of a sudden now they're stadium anthems. It's very annoying. Mm-hmm. But the thing with a movie like Naiad and some of these others is sometimes they just never are given the chance to find the audience. They're never given the chance. This, it wasn't going to be The Fighter. Okay. This wasn't, I mean, we saw Cinderella Man not be Rocky and it wanted to be Rocky. Like, we've seen that happen over and over and over and over again. I mean, that Russell Crowe, probably when he might've been the most famous an actor has been in the, since like Marlon Brando or Al Pacino. And the movie still wasn't that big of a box office success and still couldn't get an Oscar nomination for Best Picture. But just because you haven't seen something doesn't mean it's not good. And that doesn't mean that, oh, well, it's probably pretentious fodder. No. I mean, if you want to sit here and tell me that having the Ingmar Bergman collection somewhere in my house and going through that, that I'm pretentious for that. Yeah, I could see that. I mean, it's a bunch of Swedish black and white movies that are just about death and dying and depression and all that fun stuff. I get that. That's fine. But there's so much artistic merit to that stuff. And I think right now, when people haven't heard of something, I always go back to, who the fuck is Arcade Fire? Rosie O'Donnell plastered that on a shirt when they won Best Album at the Grammys for The Suburbs. How, like, that's the kind of stuff. And now I'm not saying Naiad, look, The Suburbs is one of my favorite albums of all time. I'm not saying Naiad is anywhere near that, but it is funny how when these nominations and things come out, the initial reaction is to always be annoyed at the thing that wasn't as popular and say, oh, Annette Bening got in instead of Margot Robbie. You haven't even seen Naiad. Okay, but maybe if you sat down and watched Naiad, you'd understand why Barbie isn't actually as good of a movie as you think it is.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, like, when now that we're just talking about the comparison between Annette Bening and Margot Robbie here, you've said it several times, like, Margot Robbie gives a phenomenally underrated physical performance in Barbie. Mm-hmm. Annette Bening was swimming for 8 hours a day in this movie.
Insane.
Like, that is a physical performance beyond what you could ever imagine. And a lot of people don't understand that she actually did it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Annette Bening, it's like when Mickey Rourke did The Wrestler. Mm-hmm. And it's not as good of a performance as Mickey Rourke in The Wrestler. Like, let's be real. Mickey Rourke in The Wrestler is all time. It's all time. But it's very similar to that, where it's a demanding role that you almost don't see how physically demanding it is. Because when you look at somebody like Mickey Rourke in that movie, you say, oh, okay, so he put on some muscle. No, look at the crap that he put his body through to get that role and then to perform in that movie. And that's what Annette Bening does here. I mean, Annette Bening, when you look at Annette Bening in this movie, find me a 65-year-old woman who looks as jacked as she does in this movie.
Yeah.
And yeah, you can laugh when she's lifting her 10-pound weights and she barely has a bicep. But find me a 65-year-old woman who's in the physical shape that Annette Bening is in this movie. I get in Hollywood, you're going to have more opportunities to go work out and do all that fun stuff. But, like, it's incredible. It really is. I have so much respect for her. And she's never going to win an Oscar because she ain't winning for this. And she's just not going to win one. And it's sad. It really is, because Annette Bening deserves one, and she's deserved two in her career, at least, for American Beauty and 20th Century Women. And, you know, she is Naiad, right? It's kind of like how Mickey Rourke was The Wrestler. He was Randy the Ram Robinson. He'd been beat down and chewed up, and then he's coming back, but he still can't do it right. She is Naiad. How many times does she have to go out there and prove herself before she gets the respect she wants? So, yeah, it's perfect casting, and Annette Bening is just phenomenal in this movie.
Yeah, she is. And this story, like, we spent so much time talking about Annette Bening, and I mean, we should probably talk about Jodie Foster a little bit too, who it feels like Jodie Foster, right? It just feels like a Jodie Foster role. And then, like you said, you finally see the real person she is playing at the end of this movie. And you're like, no, I understand this role completely. I understand exactly what you're doing. And I actually really appreciated the chemistry Annette Bening and Jodie Foster had in this movie, because it worked so well. They just, you could tell that they felt like lifelong friends, right? They just felt like people who had been in each other's lives for so long, just acting naturally.
Yeah, so Willie D says over here, never even heard of this movie, but y'all are really talking it up. It's a good watch. It's a good watch. Mm-hmm. And John, going to your point there, I really appreciated that as well. I do find that what a lot of movies that are dealing with LGBT characters, and then when they try to have a same-sex friendship, it always feels like it has to dive into sex. Oh, we're going to do that. You know, oh, it's going to go to that level. Yeah. And what I really appreciate about this movie is, you know, they have the line, oh, we dated for 2 seconds, you know, 1,000 years ago, whatever. Doesn't matter. But every time that's not what this is for them. These are just lifelong friends they do love each other, but they're not in love with each other. They do love each other, and they're going to do everything they can for each other, and they're going to be there. And I love that this movie establishes that there is a history between them. But just because they're both lesbian characters, or they never define what they are, but, like, just because I'm assuming they're both lesbian characters, that doesn't mean that there has to be a romantic interest involved. And I think that's so important to this movie. And I think it is handled incredibly well. And unfortunately, in a lot of these types of movies, it's handled so unbelievably poorly, where it always feels like it has to be hanging over the entire movie of a will they, won't they. And it also leads into the really disturbing sexual assault stuff that I think is also handled really well in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I think platonic love is something that Hollywood still really struggles at portraying properly. Mm. And it's one of those things that I think most people understand platonic love very well. I think a lot of people have that friend that they are like die hard for, that there are just no romantic feelings for, but Hollywood likes pushing that will they, won't they? They like pushing the sexual tension, things like that. So a lot of movies just don't know how to handle it. And this movie just does it so well. It's a weird thing to say, but it's so uncommon in movies to see a relationship portrayed this way that you kind of have to commend it when it is there.
Yeah, and I guess what it really comes down to is platonic relationships aren't that exciting, right?
Yeah.
Like, that they're not that exciting because really what a lot of these movies do drive on is the will they, won't they. Mm-hmm. Are they going to get together in the end? Are they going to get, you know, with each other, whatever? I even think in Rocket Man, they have the moment of Elton John kissing Benny. Benny, right? That's his name. What's his name? Why can I not think of his name? It's not Benny. What is the guy who wrote, who's the brilliant guy behind all of Elton John's songs? Oh, that's terrible that I can't think of his name. Bernie Taupin. That's it. Not Benny. Bernie Taupin. He even has that moment and Bernie Taupin pushed him away and is like, you know, I'll always be there for you, but I'll never be this. They probably didn't need that moment of Elton John trying to kiss him, you know, but they put it in there anyway. And I really enjoyed Rocket Man, but you don't always need that. You can get away with, you know, just making a movie like this one where it's never even a question. I mean, you know, it's just, they go about it. And honestly, for the type of character that Diana Nyad is, there's no room for it.
No,
there isn't, you know, like that's not what she's not concerned with that. She is concerned with swimming from Cuba to Key West. That is the only thing in her life that matters at all.
Yeah. And then this movie, we haven't really talked about this, the feat that, like, this true story it's based off of at all. What an incredible accomplishment. Like, and there are moments in the movie where you really understand how difficult this task is. And they portray it really well. The fact that it takes, what is it, 4 or 5 attempts before she's actually able to do it.
Fifth attempt that she does it.
And the, I think, like, the big thing is when the young Australian attempts it as well and can't get even halfway as far as this 62-year-old woman has at that point.
I got to say, too, never connected more with anything than them sitting on the couch rooting for her to fail.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Oh my God. And that is the distance athlete competitor in you, right? Because you would sit there and, like, let's say I didn't qualify for a certain race. I remember my sophomore year, or no, it was my freshman year. I didn't qualify for the second, for the group championships in New Jersey. I finished 11th and 10th place, top 10 qualified. And I literally lost to this kid by a second. You know, it was close right at the end. And I remember looking at the results the next week being like, that kid better have sucked. And you know what? He sucked. He ran like shit. And I was so happy he ran like shit because he took that from me and I wanted to get there. And for her, it's no, this is my window. This is my opportunity. This is what I'm going to do. What I think is incredible about the Diana Nyad thing here with her swimming the 103 miles, nobody's done it since.
No.
And you think about when they climbed Everest, right? All of a sudden, a bunch of people are now going to climb Everest. You can still die doing it, but at this point, it's like a what do they call it? Like an excursion, because it's, you know, there's ladders there, and there's this, there's that. It's not the same thing. She did this, and nobody else has gone and done it. And that just speaks to how ridiculously difficult this task is. I mean, look at Alec Merlino from Survivor, who goes and does all his ultra marathons and his triathlons and all that stuff. I mean, he's sponsored now. And he's not trying to swim from Cuba to Key West. Nobody is.
No.
Nobody is. So, yeah, it's just, it's unbelievable. 103 miles. Go watch a swim meet and watching people just swim the mile.
Yeah.
And you sit there and you're like, wow, that's impressive. 103 miles. And it takes her 50 hours. Do stay awake for 50 hours.
No,
that's my task to you. Stay awake for 50 hours. Tonight, John, what time did you wake up today?
5 a.m.
You're not allowed to go to sleep until 7 a.m. on Friday or Thursday.
That sounds like a terrible idea. I'm not going to do that.
You can't do it.
But no, like, I can't
even do it. Like, you literally can't even do it. It's so unbelievable to think about just being awake for 50 hours, let alone swimming for 50 hours.
Swimming at a pace where you're not being ripped away by some of the strongest currents in the world.
And yeah, that's what he says, right? When she starts to lose it towards the end, I need good strokes. Otherwise, this isn't going to work.
Yeah.
And she starts to be able to figure it out, but it's, you know, I need good strokes. And you see the body starting to shut down. And this movie did a good job of capturing the body shutting down, her mind shutting down. And that's what's impressive, right? With Annette Bening, she's really playing up how much she's losing it. And you're believing that she's losing it. So yeah, this was a solid watch. It's a movie I would have watched had it not gotten any Oscar noms. Me and John were still looking for excuses not to watch it.
Yep. And I'm really glad we did though. I'm really glad. Yeah. I can't remember. Somebody suggested to us last week, and I'm really glad you did, because it was a really worth the watch.
Yeah. Here, let me jump in, because I think they might have. Boop boop boop. Why don't you do? Yeah, Michael Goria. He says, why don't you do Naiad for your next review? Haven't seen it yet, but it's on Netflix. Well, I hope he's seen it now.
Yeah. It was good.
Real Nicolas Cage had said to do May, December too, but then we didn't do May, December because it didn't get any Oscar.
It didn't get anything.
No. It kind of went with the Oscar nomination route instead. Although Dylan Randazzo also said to do The Color Purple. So it's fun. And Mason Band said to do his favorite movie of last year, which is The Iron Claw. Now, The Iron Claw kind of feels like downer version of Naiad.
Yeah. 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 Anyone who knows that story. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, I want to say, like, the box jellyfish scene in this movie is actually terrifying.
Brutal. Yeah, I don't like that.
No, it was horrifying.
Yeah, I don't like the idea of that. Like, what were they then talking about? Like, the one person who bought it or bit it, ate it or something, and swallowed just died?
Yeah.
And if she would have had it one more time, she would have died?
That's the weirdest thing about, like, neurotoxins and the fact that, like, you don't gain an immunity to them. They just stick in your body.
Yeah. It just gets terrifying. Worse and worse and worse over time. Kind of disgusting. Kind of not fun.
Adds to how incredible this feat is. Also, there were sharks.
Yeah, because she's not just going up against the water and her body. She's going up against things that want to kill her or that can kill her, even if they don't want to. Mm.
Yeah, it's an incredible feat, and it makes sense that they made a movie about it, and it makes sense that it got nominated for Oscars.
Yeah, I dug it.
Which also just goes to show, once again, how strong this Best Actress category is this year.
It's out of control.
Yeah, it's absolutely
out of control.
Probably one of the best years for Best Actress nominees ever.
Yeah, it's really, really good. Willie D says he could probably do it if he was returning to the U.S. with a box of Cuban cigars. Do you buy that?
No, I don't.
No, you don't buy it? Wow.
I'm not going to try. I'm not like putting you down here, Willie, but that's, let me tell you, it doesn't look like an easy thing to do.
You got no faith. You got anything else you want to say about Naiad?
Check it out if you haven't already.
Yeah, it's an easy find. It's on Netflix. Yep. We're doing Drive Away Dolls next week, right?
Absolutely, no question about it.
Okay, so Drive Away Dolls, so I'll just say that now. We're doing Drive Away Dolls next week, and we're doing Black Panther Wakanda Forever. Everybody like this video. If you've made it this far and you haven't liked the video yet, please like the video. Let's do it. Come on. Because we're now jumping into Thor Love and Thunder, so we got to like something. And so like the video, because now we're jumping into Thor Love and Thunder. I will preface with Thor Love and Thunder, and I feel like I've prefaced a lot of my Marvel movies with this statement. Didn't hate it as much as I thought I was going to.
Honestly, really, I liked it more than the first time I saw it.
You hyped it up as really bad, and it's still bad.
It's still
bad. You hyped it up as, like, really, really bad. I do actually think that this movie has the second best villain in the Marvel movies.
I agree. And I, you know what? I think everyone said that about this movie. Christian Bale is so good as Gore the God Butcher. Unfortunately, they kind of skewer his story a little bit and they don't make him as like actually imposing and intimidating as it should be. But my God, Christian Bale is terrifying in this movie.
He's great, man. He really is. I love him in this movie. And when I saw him at the beginning, I didn't realize it was him and I didn't know he was in this movie. So I sat down and I watched it. And then as that scene happened, I said, oh, that's actually a pretty cool opening. And then I was like, wait, that's Christian Bale? And then Christian Bale is horrifying in this movie. Like,
yeah.
And obviously I'm exaggerating, but Christian Bale gives an Oscar-worthy performance compared to the MCU. Like I'm saying, like compared to what everybody else in the MCU does. And he's working with nothing. And I think that's just so impressive because when you look at how strong he is, and when I say Oscar-worthy, I mean he gives like a 7 out of 10 in this movie, especially when you're on the Christian Bale thing. But the amount of effort he's putting in is just a different level of effort than is going on from anybody else. And it works. And look, I don't care what his story is. I don't care what the story of Thor, Love, and Thunder is. He is just a great, great villain.
Yes. And it is a very compelling story. I think it's this interesting idea that doesn't quite work in the MCU because gods are really weird in the MCU, the way they've presented them. Okay, they kind of presented them as aliens, but it's like, oh, but there are all these gods, and you're introducing us to this like pantheon here. But what does it mean to be a god? It's not really established, and we're supposed to like understand it at the beginning of this movie.
Yeah, also, like, that thing at the beginning with the gods just laughing in his face and stuff, the Waititi humor in this does not work.
No, not at all. This movie's not funny. There is not a single moment in this movie where I laugh.
No, it's not funny. And that's really the biggest problem, because the story isn't the frustrating part of this movie. The screaming goats from Willie D take off a full point of his score. Yeah. That's
reasonable. Yeah.
That's very 100%. Reasonable. The screaming goats are terrible in this movie. And a lot of the humor is just so bad throughout. So yeah, I mean, I ended up giving this 2 stars. I think that when you really look at it as a great villain, the story's fine. The Jane thing is super forced, but, you know, it is what it is. But it's so, like, it's just a roller coaster of up and down and why did I watch this scene? And I can't even think of things that really stand out as terrible to me other than the humor. Oh, and I will say this. If you're listening to this podcast and you ever get to make a movie, first of all, call us and say, like, hey, I want to come on your podcast and do all that stuff. But then after you're done doing that, if somebody says to you, you can use songs from the 80s, you are allowed to use songs other than Welcome to the Jungle and Sweet Child of Mine and that. Like, if I see another movie that starts playing Welcome to the Jungle before an action sequence, like, I don't know what I'm going to do because I don't know what I can say on YouTube, but I'm mad. I've had enough. Yeah. I don't need to hear Welcome to the Jungle and then action scenes. There are other songs from the 80s, and it's so frustrating because they've all done it so many freaking times.
And the problem is it doesn't even really fit the aesthetic they were going for in this movie.
No, it's all the music stuff is very forced. And then you see the poster for the movie and you're like, oh, look, they're going for like the rock god kind of thing. But then they're really not.
But and they kind of did. But then they decided to change Thor's outfit from his like rock god outfit to the quite frankly, the worst costume he has had in any of these movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the costume I could give a shit about, to be honest.
I just noticed it looked terrible. That's all.
I even noticed. Now I'm trying to. Okay, now I got to look up what he wears.
It's like the gold, red, and blue.
I mean, John, he did have the naked part. I mean, come on.
That is true. I mean, I get that was the closest I came to laughing in the entire movie.
Oh yeah, no, his costume's stupid. Yeah, with the gold. Yeah, you're right. You're right. It's very cheesy.
But there are a lot of little things in this movie that really irk me about it. And the biggest thing, it doesn't feel like a coherent film. It feels like a bunch of scenes put together. That was my original complaint about this movie when it came out. I ended up giving it 2 stars this time. That was more in merit to where I place it in my MCU rankings than what I actually thought of the film.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've kind of screwed myself with some of those. Because
you really backed yourself into a corner, John. You're being punished.
A little bit. Yeah, a little bit. But point I'm trying to make is this movie is so jarring in its transitions, and it lacks any sense of tonality. The gore, the God Butcher parts, where he is like straight up terrifying, the attack on New Asgard, probably the best sequence in the entire movie is the black and white sequence on the moon.
Yeah, that part's actually incredible looking too. For a movie that once again doesn't look all that great, that part looks incredible.
Yeah. Terrifying villain. It doesn't juxtapose the comedy that's trying to be forced down our throats in this movie. It just contrasts it, and it doesn't work coherently because of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I do. You're two opposite ends of that spectrum. And I do understand that in a lot of comic books, you do go from really over-the-top comedy to really over-the-top violence, but it's comic booky.
Yeah.
When it gets to the darkness of this movie, it doesn't feel overly comic booky. And it's just, yeah, they're two opposite ends of the spectrum. Another thing that really bothered me in this is the Jane Natalie Portman storyline.
That is a like pretty famous comic storyline.
Yeah, I mean, is it told well here? Am I supposed to think it was told well? You tell me. No? Okay, because I didn't think it was told well.
It wasn't.
Okay, because I didn't think it was told well. I thought it was like really, really lazy and kind of boring. And you know what really annoyed me? Like, this is such a nitpick, but I don't care. Look, I'm 29 movies into this damn thing. This is such a nitpick, but I really hated that they didn't tell us what kind of cancer she had.
Just cancer.
It was just that it was stage 4 cancer. Like, yeah. I felt like I was watching a soap opera. It was, yeah, Ma, got the cancer, Ma. Like, what?
It's the scene in the room, right?
Yeah.
When the mom's like, I have cancer.
And then it's, because also the thing is, and I do understand that there's a lot of people with stage 4 cancer who, like, you know, are able to fight it. I think it's like 13% survival rate on stage 4 mm-hmm. cancer and stuff. And like, you know, you might have stage 4 cancer, be walking around with it and not even know. And then, you know, not to freak everybody out now, but then all of a sudden you go to the doctor and now you have stage 4 cancer. But she says she goes to the doctor because she wasn't feeling good. And they tell her it's stage 4 cancer. I mean, I know people who have died of stage 4 cancer in that same exact scenario of they were fine one day, the next day they start to feel terrible. They go to the doctor and it's like, they're not then like, you know, functioning very well. No. If you're catching it that late. So I don't know, like that. I just thought that was so stupid, and I'm nitpicking, but I just didn't like that. And I felt like the Jane thing was just very, very forced. I thought it was cool at the end that she gets to go and, you know, be in whatever place. Another thing that I have to nitpick. I hate the little, it's the place. I hate the little, how like the kids, there was like a couple that were creatures and a couple that weren't. And
yeah,
and
all it was weird. It was something that I didn't mention last week when we were watching Doctor Strange. There's a random like yak person in that movie.
Yeah, why?
I don't know. I don't understand why they're just like these random aliens all of a sudden that we don't know where they came from.
Because that was never established as a thing in these movies early on. It was always regular people. And then if they went to a different planet, there'd be aliens or something. But when they showed that one kid, that had a very 80s sci-fi feel to it for me.
It did. And I think that is what Taika Waititi was kind of going for here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's kind of going for this like 80s nostalgia flick and doesn't capture it. I don't know how you could not capture that. In all honesty, it's just like it doesn't go far enough at times. It's not acknowledging what it wants to be. And Taika Waititi's humor doesn't work with the 80s aesthetic.
So let me ask you, yeah, let me ask you this question. Is Taika Waititi funny?
Jojo Rabbit's pretty funny. As well as what we did in the what we do in the shadows, that was pretty funny. Mm-hmm. I think that he has moments. I think we're at a point where he kind of had a shtick, and we're used to the shtick now.
Yeah, that's where that's what I'm feeling too. It almost feels like as we prep ourselves for Adam Sandler time, right? It almost feels like he is funny. And I mean, mm-hmm. What We Do in the Shadows is incredible. I love What We Do in the Shadows.
And
I do
hilarious.
Think Jojo Rabbit's great. But he also just did what? Next Goal Wins? And that was supposed to be terrible. I didn't see it, but that was supposed to be very, very bad. I didn't love Ragnarok. Is his humor, Hunt for the Wilder People is very good, but has his humor run its course to the point where you, like you said, it's a shtick that we've seen now so many times? Or is this just because he's put in charge of directing Thor, Love, and Thunder in 2022 and he says, screw it, I'm going to do this?
I wouldn't be surprised if it's actually people being like, oh, this is what you're known for, do this. And people just aren't letting him actually have creative control over things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be nice to dream and hope that that's it. But I don't know, man. Like, I think he's a funny guy, but like, I'm not overly impressed with his Marvel movies. That's for sure.
Well, he was taken off the next Thor project after this one.
What is the next Thor project?
They're
making another Thor? Why?
Because Thor will return. It told us at the end of the movie.
I know, but why will he return? Why does he have to come back? Why
because Chris I'm pretty sure Chris Hemsworth has like the longest contract in all of Marvel.
Does he?
How many movies he signed on for. I'm pretty sure. Because they make you sign like 8 movie deals at a time.
Yeah, and then if they can't find a way to get him involved in the other Avengers movies or the bigger whatever they are at this point, they're not even the Avengers, but whatever they are, if they can't find a way to get him involved, then what are you going to do?
Exactly. Speaking of getting involved, can we talk about why the Guardians of the Galaxy are in this movie at all?
Why are the Guardians? And I know you hate the Guardians of the Galaxy, and I like the Guardians of the Galaxy, but why are the Guardians of the Galaxy in this movie?
Because that's how Endgame ended.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, they really literally,
right?
Out of nowhere, huh?
Yeah. Well, because, like, I mean, through Infinity War and Endgame, like, that was the relationship that was being made and stuff. I thought there were some good dynamics between, like, Thor and Rocket in Infinity War. Kind of worked. The Thor, like, the Quill being, you know, kind of, like, shown up by Thor and, like, having that, like, ego contest with him was a thing. But they didn't use any of that in this movie.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say is if you're going to bring the Guardians of the Galaxy in, give them a storyline, even if it's a half-assed storyline. Don't just give them 3 scenes or whatever it was. Like, give them an actual storyline that we get to watch take place because we don't get to see a through line.
No.
And is this the last time we're going to see the Guardians of the Galaxy? I guess Volume 3.
There is a third movie. There's a third Guardians movie. And I actually like that one.
Boo. We'll get there eventually, everybody. We still will finish out the Marvel Cinematic Universe. We're just going to wait till when Deadpool 3 is coming out.
Then we might know what's happening in the future, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I just don't like... I don't like it. And I think the inclusion of the Guardians of the Galaxy is also why we get this 80s rock inspiration.
That's a good point. Which would have made more sense if the Guardians of the Galaxy actually were in more of the movie.
Like, this movie would have been way more entertaining if we actually had Thor and Star-Lord, like, fighting over leadership of the Guardians of the Galaxy. That sounds like a way more entertaining movie.
Yeah. Yeah, why Love and Thunder? Why is that the name of this movie? I know they say it at the end, where it's like, we're Love and Thunder, but why is that the name of this movie, considering that's, like, the last 5 seconds?
Because love is the most important thing in this movie. It's clearly the main theme of it. I'm not even joking. I am fairly certain that is the reason this is called Love and Thunder.
Yeah, that is also a very, very... Okay, let's talk about the cameo before I just start rambling. Let's talk about the cameo of Russell Crowe, since we talked about Russell Crowe before. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about him as Zeus? And how do you feel about this God scene in general?
I hate this God scene. It's the most pointless scene in the entire movie. It's so bad. It doesn't do any. It's a MacGuffin scene. And like, I don't like MacGuffin scenes. They go here to get help, and then it just turns out they're just getting Thunderbolt, Lightning Bolt, whatever the hell they called it.
Yes, yeah, so that Tessa Thompson can run around with the Thunderbolt.
Yeah, Lightning Bolt.
What? What's Tessa Thompson's character's name?
Valkyrie.
Valkyrie. Okay, these should be easy names to remember. Why am I having a hard time remembering these damn names?
I don't know.
Because I didn't like
Tessa Thompson's also not given anywhere near enough in this movie.
Yeah, she really doesn't do much. She just kind of makes faces. And then, okay, okay. Why? Okay, wait, I need to talk about this now because I can't help myself.
I know. I know exactly where you're going. I'm pretty sure every single one of our listeners knows exactly where you're going right now.
I don't know because I'm not going to Tessa Thompson. I'm going somewhere else. So maybe not. Why does Disney panders too much. Okay. Yes. They pander too much. Why is, what's his name? Kror? What's the rock guy's name?
Kork. Who would take Kork?
Kork, whatever. Yeah.
Kork, maybe. Why? I think.
Why is it thrown in there in this movie that like they're like all the rock people are dudes and they make babies and it feels like they're like they're trying to pander there, but they almost might be making something that's kind of offensive. Am I wrong in my thinking on that?
It's because they got a lot of backlash about the first gay character in the MCU being that like small part in Endgame.
Mm-hmm.
They got a lot of backlash for that.
Yeah. This is the type of stuff when I look at this where I say, why? Like, I just can't help but ask the question of why. And I'm not somebody who's going to sit there and say, why do they make the characters gay? I think that's a pretty,
Whatever.
Yeah, that's a pretty like rude statement. I can't think of what the word is. It's an inappropriate belief there, right? But I'm not going to sit there and say, why are they making all these characters gay? That's not the point. It's why are they suddenly throwing in Thor, Love, and Thunder, that the way they make new rock people is by two male rock people holding hands over lava. And it feels like, oh, we couldn't fit a LGBT character into this movie, even though I think Valkyrie might be.
Valkyrie, but, very gay.
Yeah, very much. So they say, oh, we couldn't fit that into the movie, so we're going to fit it in this way. And I sit there and I go, this is why so many people sit here and say Disney and Marvel are just pandering at this point. Yeah. And trying and failing in so many ways, because you're not walking out of this going, oh my God, Kork is a, or whatever his name is a, you know, LGBT icon. Like, that's not the truth. So,
and that's the problem with the way that this type of representation has been approached by, quite frankly, Disney in general, is representation matters when it's good representation. That doesn't just mean having representation present in a movie. It means having it flushed out and meaningful in a movie when it's included.
Yes. 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 And I agree with that. In this movie, it felt like it was thrown in so they could say, look, we have a gay character. See?
Yep.
But it's okay. What's the overarching meaning of this? What are you trying to say? Because this, it's not like this was established in the earlier ones. And I know for sure this wasn't established in the comics. So if this is the decision you're going to make, why are you making this decision? Is it strictly so that you can get the headlines in Deadline and The Hollywood Reporter and Variety that say, oh, Thor, Love, and Thunder has the most LGBT characters of any Disney movie? Okay. But like, is that how you view LGBT characters at this point, of just like, oh yeah, like they just do it. Like, I don't know. It feels very dismissive. And so, yeah, that was another thing that I just had to bring up in this movie, because I'm sure as we sit down to watch Drive Away Dolls next week, which as I look at AP News, their headline is Ethan Coen and Trisha Cook give sexploitation cinema a queer spin in Drive Away Dolls. I'm sure that's going to be handled so much better. At least I hope it's handled so much better than anything Thor, Love, and Thunder did. And it's just, yeah, I don't know. The Marvel movies have just jumped the shark on so much of that stuff. Where, like, I remember when we were talking about Eternals, it's like, so they made these creatures were made, but then they have specific love interests, and that one is deaf because they didn't think to make the non-deaf person. Anyway. Okay. Yes. Thor, Love, and Thunder. Where was I going to go with Tessa Thompson that you thought I was going to go with Tessa Thompson other than the
fact I thought you were going to mention the sisterhood comment after Tessa Thompson walks in on Jane at the sink.
I don't even remember that scene.
It was essentially Tessa Thompson saying there was too much testosterone around and she needed another woman around.
Gotcha. Yeah, I don't even remember that
scene. I actually thought it was a better approach than we have ever had to that type of scene in the MCU.
Is that the scene where she breaks the sink?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I remember that. Yeah. No, that scene was fine. Yeah. That scene was fine. And I think too, like what started to hurt these movies is that they didn't know what they wanted to tell the story of and what they wanted to do. There's too much real world that bleeds into these movies as they're being made. There's too much fan service that bleeds into these movies as they're being made. And you're no longer just watching these movies play out the way that the people who are making them at this point, the people who are making them have no control anyway. They're just puppets. Yeah. I mean, they're the dolls, marionettes. You know, marionettes. Thank you. I wanted to call them Metrieska, but that's certainly not correct. So, you know, they're just marionette. They're not the marionette though. They're the people. Well, I guess they are the marionette. They're not the one controlling it. Anyway, before that gets out of control, I just think that they don't know what story they're telling. So it's okay. We got to put this in. We got to put this in. We got to hit this fan service moment. We got to hit this fan service moment. We got to hit this, like, we got to hit this moment because that's where like the political ideology is of our big fan base. And we are the highest grossing movies in the world right now. So we got to make sure we're hitting this, this, and this. And it's like, okay, but then you watch a movie like Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse and they put a Black Lives Matter sticker on a backpack. And that gets everything across that you need to get across. And it says what you want it to say in a sticker, yeah, as opposed to in Thor, Love, and Thunder, where you're like, what am I watching? So,
I think Marvel just doesn't know how to stick to a single storyline. And that's the problem.
Mm-hmm. They're trying to put too much in.
This movie could have just been about Gore the God Butcher, or it could have been about the mighty Thor, Jane Foster. But instead, it's about both. And they decided to use it to do this stupid God scene. I hate this. Man, I know you asked me. I hate this theme. Russell Crowe is so bad in this movie. Like, so I don't even know what he was doing. It makes no sense. And again, this goes to this whole idea of like the contrast in this movie. Christian Bale, I'm pretty sure, thought he was making a completely different movie.
Yeah. I buy that.
I'm pretty sure I read that somewhere when this movie came out, too. Like, Christian Bale had no idea what the rest of this movie was and just knew what he was doing. And
because he barely interacts with anything that's actually happening in the movie.
Yeah. He gets to tell the creepy story to the children, and that's a fantastic scene.
Yeah.
Like, Christian Bale is just unleashed in this movie, and it's so good. But It doesn't make sense totally. I hate it. I hate the tonal discrepancies in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And Willie D, it's a Gore the God Butcher, such a cool character. I wish he had more camera time. I agree with you, though. It's like the mighty Thor, Gore the God Butcher, and then they have Thor. And who's the least interesting character? Thor. Well, when the main character of every movie is the least interesting character, that's a problem. And then you have to find a way to make the other characters super interesting and dive into everything that makes them who they are without losing who your main character is. And then you just don't have enough time for all of them. And it really makes me appreciate Christopher Nolan and The Dark Knight even more. And even The Dark Knight Rises, because even Bane is a really solid villain. And when you look at how those are handled, Christopher Nolan made sure that even with all the other characters and your main character going on, your villain is there and you know what it's up against. And I think that's what I was getting to the point of is I think the people, when they were making these Marvel movies, forgot that Marvel movies really are simply about good versus evil. That really is at the core what every single one of these movies is supposed to be. Yes, you're going to have characters who view things differently, who do things differently. You're going to be able to bring in, everybody has their own unique things, but it should ultimately be good versus evil. And Gore the God Butcher, he's luring Thor out there to try to kill him, but we don't actually see them interact until an hour and a half into the movie. okay, so like, let's have something else happen then. Let's find a way to get Gore the God Butcher more involved in this movie, rather than going on a journey to see the other gods and realize, wow, Zeus is an idiot. Tee-hee-hee-hee.
We have a character called the God Butcher, and we see him kill a single god.
A single god. Has Thor kills as many gods as Gore the God Butcher.
Yes.
It's wild.
Like,
so he's maybe Thor the God Butcher.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know, maybe this movie just like completely lacked Tom Hiddleston. Maybe that's the missing picture in a Thor movie.
I could see that. Yeah, I mean, Tom Hiddleston wasn't enough. That's for sure. Because he was in like the one scene where they say he died. Also didn't like the narrations of, let me tell you a story about
this. Yeah, it was dumb. I
hated that. Again, that's like, is the humor good? No, it's not. There's no humor there. And that's where I'm starting to wonder, is what TT's funny?
Also weird that they decided to like redo the Matt Damon, Chris Pine thing again.
Yeah, they love doing that, huh?
Yep.
I don't know why. John, can we stop talking about these movies?
Yes, please do.
Okay. We're done. Next week, Drive Away Dolls and Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. And then the week after that, Dune Part 2. And then the week after that, Adam Sandler bracket. And the week after that, we're going to be doing the Letterboxd 16 Most Popular Movies bracket. There's your next 4 weeks. Also, if you're not a patron, become a patron. Patreon.com/thespecialist. We are cruising through our best pictures. That's for $10 patrons. We've already done Anatomy of a Fall, American Fiction, Barbie, The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, and Maestro. You still have access to all of those if you sign up today. So go ahead, sign up. Our $5 Tuesdays, License to Kill was released today. So we talked James Bond for the $5 Tuesdays. Last week was When Harry Met Sally, and the week before was The Sixth Sense. Next week is going to be Dune. So we're going to be doing a lot of Dune talk, John and I, over the next couple weeks. So Dune will be coming out next week, and boy, does that movie suck. But yeah,
you should preface everything. That you're talking about the 1984 version.
Yeah, I'm talking about the 1984 version. I'm not talking about the guy whose name I can't pronounce, dude. Anyway, thank you all so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.